You're listening to The Profile.
Hi, and welcome to The Profile podcast. I'm Andy Peck. For the last 19 years, it's been my joy to investigate how Christians can lead better by talking to a variety of Christian leaders inside and outside the Christian world. So whether you are in a leadership role or simply looking to maximize your influence for God, I hope you find this next conversation helpful. The show is brought to you by Premier Christianity, the UK's leading Christian magazine. Get full online access and the print magazine every month by becoming a subscriber. See special offers available now at premierchristianity.com. Growing up in my church, they were old men in suits. Now it seems that they may be male or female and could be middle-aged. I'm referring to elders. The word suggests older people, of course, but within the local church, they are men and women in some churches of sufficient respect and character who help lead the church. They are often volunteers, or they may be paid or part-time. But the need for elders is not confined to a church setting. Elders are needed in all areas of public and commercial life, people whose wisdom and insight can be a model and guide to the younger generation. Well, I welcome back this week to the leadership show Trevor Waldock. He is seeking to champion the importance of elders. He's the founder of Emerging Leaders and also the Youth Compass Project, and author of many books on leadership themes, including The 18 Challenges of Leadership, To Plant a Walnut Tree, and Becoming Mandela. Eldership is also a theme within his latest title, The Gift of Thresholds, Flourishing Through Challenging Transitions. So welcome back, Trevor, to the Leadership Show.
Great to be with you, Andy.
So why do you believe developing elders to be so important, Trevor?
Yeah, it goes back a long way, I think, Andy. So I grew up really outside of the mainstream church, and kind of came to it because I had a conversion experience outside of church and then came into the church. So I suppose I came to it with what I feel maybe was a more objective eyes, but I came into this thing called the church, and then I heard about these people called elders, which I'd never heard of before. But I just intuitively, even at a young age, could see, well, my sense was, whatever these things called elders are, you're not. Because most of the people I met, I thought, well, you're just, not just, but you're administrators, or you're managers, and in rare cases, you're leaders. But it felt like something was missing. And on top of that, I had the experience in my early Christian years of having a couple of people in my life who I would say truly were elders and were very formative for me in shaping who I was becoming. So I think I've got that kind of perspective. I think another perspective then is I think some Christians think that the word elder was invented by the church, and it wasn't. You know, the notion of eldership has been around in traditional culture since time began, and there were always people within or on the edge of the community that had a particular role or function around that community. So I think probably what happened is the early church said, look, this life force, this movement that has been released through Pentecost, like a tidal wave of energy, if you like, busting into the world. And it broke into the world through people, and those people were meeting with other people. So groups were being formed. How do we guard the essence of that life force, that movement, to keep it going? Because that's no easy thing. And the Puritans, come back to this later, but the Puritans said you need revival every three generations, because we lose the very essence and life force of this movement. How do we do that? We need people to take a particular role or function within the communities of these new energized people to ensure that their hearts and their characters were tended, were looked after, preserved, that the core, the elements, the principles of what was bringing life to the world were looked after. It's interesting that I think leadership is seen as a spiritual gift in the New Testament, but eldership isn't talked about in that way. It's talked about in terms of who you are more than what you do. See, somebody and some bodies need to embody this life force, this embody the transformational spiritual journey. Who are those people that embody the journey? And it is a journey, because we know that all the way from the Old Testament is, you know, the constant call, whether it's through Abraham, Moses, whatever, it's a call to a liberation journey. We're called on this journey. Who are the people that embody it, have got the wisdom of knowing what this journey is like? And just one last thought about that is this, is, and I wrote about it in my book, Doing the Right Thing. If you look at most failure in leadership, it's got nothing to do with IQ, has got nothing to do with skill. Most failure in leadership has got to do with heart and character. And if you look in terms of what happens in the church and what, you know, creates dysfunction within the church, heart and character, whether that's, you know, all the different ways that can manifest morally, but much more in terms of egocentricity amongst leaders, and the way that leaders run their teams and their churches. And so that eldership has such a vital role in not just the church, but in society as a whole. And we've lost it, particularly in the West. We've lost eldership. And so I feel passionate about recovering it.
It's a fascinating insight, Trevor, from your past. And I'm guessing that those who have the title of elder but actually are administrators, or maybe, as you say, rarely leaders, are kind of doing their best. But perhaps it hasn't been modeled to them the kind of quality of eldership that you discovered in a few people growing up.
I absolutely, that's right, Andy. I think it's the lack of models. One of the people who writes beautifully around this, Michael Mead, he says, you know, when a society abandons its elders, the elders abandon themselves. And what he's saying is this becomes cyclical. Because we don't have role models of what eldership is, we don't know what it is to aspire to. So we assume that it must be some leadership role or management or administrative role, you know, within the church or whatever. It's because we don't know it exists. So we don't aspire to it, but also elders, those people who are probably do have the potential to be elders, do not see themselves as elders or aren't recognized as elders, because we don't talk about it. We don't know how to recognize them, and they don't know how to recognize themselves. So we're caught in this, what's the word? What's the opposite of a virtuous cycle, an unvirtuous cycle that perpetuates the loss of eldership.
In the Youth Compass Project, Trevor, you're urging the youth to aspire to be elders. And of course, many see their peers becoming influencers on social media, whatever that means. So what draws a young person to this kind of long-term aspiration, when actually there's a short-term option, which is based around social media?
Yeah, and that's where the elders would come in, because you've just used the word short-term option. Where does it lead you? So let me just say, you mentioned the Youth Compass Project. So in trying to address this issue of how to reawaken eldership in the world, I've come at it from two sides. One is from the kind of midlife onwards, but I've also then tried to address it from the young person upwards. You know, that thing in the Bible, if anyone aspires to the office of eldership, you know, they aspire to a good thing, a good work. And I want to come back to that phrase, if we can, in a bit. But I've tried to address it from kind of both ends of the age spectrum. So I think the problem is the map that we are given, and it all sits, kind of hangs together. I grew up with a map of life, which was, you go to school, Trevor. If you do well enough, you get further education, higher education. And with that, you will then get a job. And the next phase of your life will be all about success and accumulation. And within that is you might get married, you might have a family, you'll do well at a job, you may get a career, and you'll accumulate things. You'll get a mortgage, you'll get a house, and you'll get some nice things, a car, whatever. Success and accumulation. And then you will reach a point at 60, 65, where you will retire. And then you'll stop doing those things and you'll live off what you've got. And nobody really talks about that last phase. That's the map that many of us have grown up with. And it's within that map that many young people are growing up with. But I believe it's an even more shrunken map. Because what we're not telling people is, do we realize that more and more leaders are getting out of leadership earlier and earlier? See this particularly in organizations. So as whereas people were going on to 60, 65, they're now by 50, they're saying, I've had enough. I've had enough. Do this anymore. So they're getting out of the way, which means the pressure on even younger people to step up to those levels of leadership is increased. So sometimes the rewards are higher and the pressures are higher, which means also the burnout rates are higher and faster. Because what other map have you got? Is that's what you do. But then you hit that retirement age and you see a whole generation of people who don't know what to do. They feel disenfranchised, unrecognized. I have friends in their 70s who dare not retire because they're terrified of the loss of identity. So they'll just keep going until they can't keep going because there's nothing else. And what I want to say is this is a modern map of Western society. It is not the map that was always there. The map that was always there was this, is yeah, of course, you'll go and get educated. And then you'll move into that first half of life where you're succeeding and accumulating, absolutely, and getting lots of experiences. But all of that is simply preparation for your real life work. Why are you on the planet? What is your unique reason for existing here? And at a certain point around the midlife, the elders would come and tap you on the shoulder and say, Trevor, it's time. It's time to start crystallizing all that experience into wisdom. It's time to get beyond that old ego-centered identity and renegotiate your identity around a deeper sense of who you are. And let's now look at how you're going to contribute your true purpose in life. So in that sense, and people even like Jung said, you know, is your real life work doesn't even begin to that last phase of life. So the old maps saw an increasing usefulness of life, whereas the map that you and I grew up with when we were at school sees an increasing uselessness or kind of lostness of life. So given all that, what I've said to young people is, look, here's a different map. Here's a different map. You will reach a phase in your life in your 40s, 50s, 60s, where you can truly invest why you're here on the planet. And you can be preparing for that right now. If you view your life right now as a classroom, so every day, every experience in this phase of education and accumulation and success, great, go get it. But also you're going to fail. How do you learn from that? Get all of those experiences, but look at your experiences through the grid of who are you becoming. I wrote a book called Becoming Mandela because Mandela became a kind of global icon of an elder, but Mandela was not the Mandela of his early years. He became Mandela, and he became Mandela because he intentionally worked on his heart and character. That's the work he did. You know, even in Robben Island, 20 minutes a day, he would go into deep self-reflection around heart and character because he knew that that was the decider of his leadership. And Mandela became Mandela because from birth to death, his life was surrounded by elders. In fact, one of his contemporaries in South Africa, Raul Khoza, he said leadership is formed in the cradle of eldership. You can only fulfill your leadership potential to the degree that you've got these people around you who can help you truly fulfill that potential.
Well, there's some fascinating insights, Trevor. You asked me to ask you about aspiring. You said you'll come back to that. Is now the time to do that?
Yeah, we can do that because I think it's a fascinating thing. Anyone who aspires, and you know, when I growing up as a young leader, pastor or whatever in the church, you know, the idea of aspiring to everything, anything, kind of almost sounded slightly suspect. You know, you shouldn't have ambition, and you know, having ambition, and most people saw that as aspiring to be a leader. You know, and there is obviously a danger in that. Obviously, there is an ego danger in that, as well as a real calling and a gift. But it doesn't talk about leadership, it talks about eldership. But the interesting word is the word aspire, because this word aspire is made up of two words, and it literally means to go beyond your ego. And that's the work of the shift from leadership into eldership, is to go beyond your ego. Because it's our ego that will hold us in, down, and backwards from fulfilling our potential. But the thing about elders is they have gone beyond their ego. It's no longer about them. And I'm not saying they don't have their course, they've still got their battles. We all will always have our battles. But they have fought those battles and gone beyond their ego. So the calling is, are you willing? Are you willing to go beyond your ego in order to take up this position, role, function, relationship within the church, the organization, to truly help it and individuals within it to realize its true potential, its true reason for being in the world?
Trevor, in previous generations, you kind of talked about this map.
Yeah.
And that map obviously had an apprenticeship model connected to it in certain trades. Today, many young people often perceive the older people to be out of touch, slow, not abreast of new technology. It's been said it's a young person's world. I just wonder to what extent, and you've been working with young people through the Youth Compass Project and other and emerging leaders as well. I'm just wondering what you see of the younger generation that suggests that they do aspire to the kind of eldership you're describing.
I'm not sure I generally see it because they don't know it exists, is my first comment. So
yeah,
we
yeah.
don't talk about it. You know, that's my thing, is we need to be talking about eldership to get it recovered in society so that young people begin to know, do you know what, there is another map out there. So that's the first thing.
Yeah.
The second thing is this, is let me try and give a couple of examples. So I've been running this project for over the last year, which is the Elders Project. And in the Elders Project, I interview anyone and everyone across the world, all kinds of backgrounds, just about their experience of eldership. That's all we do. It's 45 minutes. It's a structured, I've got a half a dozen or so questions, which they see beforehand. And I just interview them around that. And that's actually all of that's now becoming another book called Tap on the Shoulder, which hopefully will come out next year. But in the process of that, I interviewed a barrister, or someone who was a barrister. So she'd been a barrister, very successful, but shifted career into the art world. And she became a very successful international art dealer. And when I met her and talked about eldership, she said, I'd never heard of the word. I've no idea what you're talking about. So we had a fascinating conversation, but we got into this conversation because she was saying, I don't think I've got anything of any value to the next generation because, you know, it's all gone. Even art has gone digital, and there's whole new ways that they are cloning art and selling art and making money. It's a whole new thing. She said, I don't know anything about any of that. So what I did, I just began to ask her about her experience, about how she handled certain things, and just teased it out and teased it out. And I helped her begin to see that the principles through which she looked at the issues of her generation were exactly the same principles that a young person needs for this generation. So if we can separate a person's experience from the wisdom, you see, elders are defined as people with wisdom. So it means I can take my experience from one situation, and because I've got the essence, the principles, the core of it, I'm able to ask them questions around where's this going? So I was having a conversation with a couple of young people a few months back about the whole issue of gender equality, and you know, the whole world has changed for me, for you, in terms of our view around gender in the last 10, 20 years or so. And I was talking with them, and they were educating me, massively helpful. But what I was able to ask them was, but where does this end up? And they, what do you mean, where does this end up? I said, well, this is the pressure to make this decision today. But I said, what we need to say is, how will this play out in terms of what does it mean to be human? And I wasn't making any judgments about anything. I was just simply saying, you haven't thought this through. You haven't thought, where's this going to lead? Where's this going to go? Because the fundamental question with all these things, whether it's gender, whether it's AI, is what does it mean to be human? Because we're all human. So what does it mean to be human? We have to answer that question. And that has to become the grid, the lens, the filter to hold up to anything. So I was able to ask questions of them that they weren't thinking about. And they were able to educate me in a world that I am constantly trying to catch up with. So what the elder does is they ask the question that comes from wisdom, the question around principle, the question around why do you exist in the world? I was listening to a podcast yesterday. Steve Bartlett was talking to a guy on the Diary of a CEO, and you know, excellent series of podcasts. He's interested interviewing a guy about MBAs programs. And a guy was giving a really clear description of what are the important dimensions of management that a person needs to learn. And he went through all these things, and I sat there and thought, that's all brilliant, but you're missing one thing. And that one thing was never picked up. And the one thing was, why does your business exist? Because once a business doesn't know why it exists, once a church has lost why it exists in the world, then it will be dead within a generation. It's being able to ask those deeper questions to separate what are you doing today and get to the principle. Because if you don't get to the essence and the principle, you won't be flexible. You won't be able to keep on reinventing yourself. Hence, I walked past the church door 2 days ago and they were singing a song that was first produced 200 years ago. And, you know, and as a museum piece, it's still a beautiful hymn. But why are we still singing a song that, you know, what does that hymn look like today? Now, I know some people work incredibly hard on reinventing songs and all the rest of it, but it's this whole point. If you haven't separated principle and the core and the essence from the current practice, you're dead within a generation, whatever it is. And I think that's what the elders bring, is that experience. One just final example. So I was coaching a guy who was a very senior person in banking in London. And I was coaching him, and he reached the point, he said, oh, I don't want to become like this, and I don't want to do this, and I don't want to do that. And it was all negatives. And I just said, can I just reflect back? I said, you've told me what you don't want to be, you don't want to do. And I said, I get all that. I said, but who do you want to be? What do you want to do? And he just stopped, head in hands. He said, I have no idea. I have no idea. He said, I did really well at university. They came along, they had a workshop at the end of university. They offered me this obscene salary to get me into the city, which I've taken. My whole mortgage and everything now depends on it. I've never stopped and asked myself, why am I on the planet? That's an elder's question. So there's a definite role, and it's a, you know, it's a mutually beneficial role. It's not a one-way thing. Is the young person is educating the elder while the elder is helping the younger person to carve a much deeper principle path through life.
Sounds, Trevor, like one action point, if you can use, if we can have an action point from this kind of conversation, would be to encourage those listening to engage in cross-generational conversations as a very starting point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and learn from each other. And I've got friends that are doing that. They just simply gather people together and they just, let's talk about this subject. What can we learn from each other? And that it's like with everything, where there is absence of relationship, things fall apart. But when there's relationship, when you've got actual friends who are younger or friends who are elder, I won't say older, because a lot of people in my generation are getting older, but I don't see them getting elder. Big difference. And I think once the generations experience each other, and I think I've just tried to write about this recently, is what we call the generation gap. I think it's an unhelpful word, and it was invented very, very recently in history. It's not a generational gap, it's a generational transition. And elders get that. You know, we're constantly in transitions, and it's identifying those life transitions and thresholds that that help us to keep on growing and developing greater potential to offer more to the world. So there, this ongoing conversation between the generations is clearly a vital, vital role, vital thing.
Sadly, times defeat us, Trevor. But how could people get in touch and get a copy of this latest book, The Gift of Threshold?
Latest book just got on Amazon. It's called The Gift of Thresholds. You can always get in touch, Trevor at trevorwaldock.net. The Youth Compass Project, you can edit, it's for free. I've created it for free for any young person in the world. And you can get that at www.youthcompassproject.com. Watch the little video first, and then if that grabs your attention, then sign up and actually get going. And get a group of people together. And if you're an older person, get a group of younger people together, and you become the convening elder, if you like, with that group of young people. Use it as a kind of ongoing syllabus. It's a mixture of video and discussion and questions and whatever.
That sounds fascinating. We've just touched the surface, obviously, of this really, really deep topic, but I'm so glad that we've been able to do so and that you've opened it up for us. So thank you very
Thank you.
much.
Well, thanks for the opportunity.
It was super to chat with Trevor Waldock about eldership and his belief that elders are something of a rarity. I take away the importance of conversation across the generations. If we're to at least attempt to bridge some of the gaps that seem to exist and help young people to aspire to a kind of character that Trevor was talking of. The details again of the project that he's involved in is youthcompassproject.com. And evidently, you can go there and download free material if you want to have those kind of conversations in the settings, maybe a church setting or wherever that you exist within. And his book is The Gift of Thresholds. His name again is Trevor Waldock, Waldock, and that's available on Amazon. Maybe you're listening and realize that you have more to offer than perhaps you thought, as you have the wisdom the next generation needs. And so maybe you can provide that alternative roadmap. Maybe it's time to start investing in those conversations. Who know where they might lead to? And how you might be able to equip and encourage those who are a bit lost in life and have roadmaps that really are not working. So, this is Andy Peck, thanking you for your company and looking forward to the next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.